I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubig of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com. Welcome to the Friday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. It is championship weekend in the National Football League. Jaguars versus Patriots first, then Eagles versus Vikings. And the headliner in our conversation this morning is the headliner of pro football, and that is touchdown Tom Brady. I was reading Ben Volen's piece this morning about Brady's right hand, which he injured in practice on Wednesday, did not practice on Thursday, showed up at practice with a glove on his right hand. Bob, it's clearly a thing.
Yes, it's clearly a thing. He did not practice on the most important day of the week to practice, which is Thursday. He put a glove on his right hand after he has been documented as saying he does not like wearing gloves at all in the game. People were trying to get a look at, was the right-handed glove concealing some kind of a boxy outline on the thumb? There's all kinds of speculation. No one knows the truth. Belichick is supposed to be having addressing the media at 9 a.m. Eastern on Friday today. What he'll tell us was obviously, who knows? Belichick has, Brady has skipped two scheduled media guest sessions the last 2 days. Yeah, it's a big deal in theory, and it's obviously it's. But we know nothing. We don't
but
know.
But Bob,
how he did
Bob,
it.
It's okay because if he can't go on Sunday, all they got to do is plug in Garoppolo. Oh wait, Mitch. Oh no.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, you know that'll be part of the fun dialogue.
Oh, that's
you know,
already become
here.
Part of the fun dialogue.
Oh, of course already, it is, and you know the great insurance policy that they no longer have now. Oh, yeah, this is now, remember, guys, in 10 years ago, the undefeated year when Brady showed up with the boot on his foot during the run up to the Super Bowl and did not exactly have his best day as the Giants overwhelmed him. And so anyway, there's precedent for this in the Brady lure. But this is stunning. I mean, everything was looking good for them, guys. They were getting people back. Last week they got James White back, and you saw what he did. This week they're supposed to get Rex Burkhead back, and he's been terrific for them when healthy this year. And everything was – and Kyle Van Noy is back, and they were really trending upward. And, you know, everything was – all systems go for this game against the Jaguars. And now suddenly there's a cloud. And
well, there is a problem when you hang your entire team on the superstar tactics of an individual, and the fact that he has been indestructible and like a cyborg makes you relax and think, well, there's, you know, Brady's going to be fine. If he had a checkered kind of history like a lot of other quarterbacks do, you'd worry about this every single week. I've read everything from he injured it in practice on Wednesday running into somebody to this is some old injury that he re-aggravated. Let's establish a couple things for people who are listening who might be casual football fans. At this point of the year, you don't need to practice to be great in a game. So don't act like he missed Thursday's practice. He's going to be ineffective. They know all the plays they're going to run. He knows them backwards and forwards. It's all his eyes and how he reads defense anyhow. So he doesn't need practice to be effective. But if his hand is bothering him, where I would be concerned, where I, you know, deep diehard Patriots fan, is I don't think that they're going to win this game against Jacksonville the way that they did against Tennessee or against a bunch of other teams, which is just, you know, a lot of short passes that turn into other things, 8, 9, 10 yards, because Jacksonville's really good at that. You're going to remember Pittsburgh beat Jacksonville with at least three bombs that Ben Roethlisberger threw that were perfect passes into the end zone. And you couldn't stop them no matter what. That's kind of how you need to beat this team, given how they're defensively constructed. And that's a hard pass to throw.
Mitch, to augment what you're saying, it wasn't not only excellent passing by a Hall of Fame quarterback, but highlight film catches by one of the handful of greatest receivers we've ever seen involved in there. They made big, spectacular highlight film plays to pull out that game. You're absolutely right.
So what do we always say?
To stay in the game.
You're only strong as your weakest point. If your quarterback's hurt, that becomes your weakest point. Okay. And again, we don't know what it is, whether it's a dislocated thumb or whatever it might be, but it's clearly a thing. And, you know, I go back to the Aaron Rodgers game. Aaron Rodgers when he came back, he was rusty and all that. But he, Mitch, he didn't lose that game because he was rusty. He couldn't throw the ball clearly as well as Aaron Rodgers has thrown the ball in the past. And if Brady can't throw the ball down the field, believe me, you're completely right. The Jaguars are going to exploit that. By the way, I was just thinking about this. In this year where we've had so much conversation about the backup quarterback, do either of you guys know who the backup quarterback is for the Jacksonville Jaguars? It's Chad Henne. It's Chad Henne.
Chad Henne from Michigan? Yeah. I didn't even know he was still playing.
Yeah. And
wow. So you got a Michigan State quarterback backing up New England and a Michigan quarterback. Boy, wouldn't that be something to see those two play? I was thinking the same thing, Michael, as you were talking about. If you take that equation, which is huge, like who's your backup quarterback? The Minnesota Vikings are like head and shoulders above everybody in this entire Final Four. They got three starting quarterbacks who are all sitting, on the bench. So, you know, wouldn't you like to have them in your fantasy league if you're at the backup quarterback position? Because they could actually bring in a Bradford or a Teddy Bridgewater. Whereas, you know, you're right. Look at these three other teams. They are one injury away from who the hell is that throwing the football?
And Brian Hoyer. Is the backup quarterback for the New England Patriots right now. And I'm not saying he's going to play, and Touchdown Tom may show up at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon and look like himself, and they go back to the Super Bowl. But it is karma is a weird thing in sports. It's a weird thing, and not always a weird thing. But in the year where they essentially gave away a guy who may turn out to be a transformational player for the 49ers, they have no fallback position if Brady is less than himself on Sunday.
No, and that was my biggest point at the time, was that they had an excellent insurance policy and they no longer have that insurance policy. Now, they still have, instead of having a $5 million insurance policy, you know, a $1 million insurance policy, they now have a term life, you know, for like $25,000.
Low budget.
You know, they have a professional quarterback who has been known to have had some successful days in this league. It's not inconceivable he could come in and play well. It's not inconceivable. Now, I'm sitting here thinking, here's a scenario for you guys. It's halftime, and Brady is 3 for 11 for 29 yards, and the coach says, you know, I saw this play out not too long ago. My good buddy Nick Saban had a brainstorm. I'm going to sit Brady down and put Hoyer in, even though Brady still wants to play.
The difference is that the kid sitting for Alabama was arguably better than the kid who was starting for Alabama. I'm pretty sure that no one's going to say that about Brian Hoyer. I think actually that's already gone through his head, to be honest with you, Bill Belichick being the coach that he is. And I think he's already devising a game plan that's heavy on the run. You know, and maybe Gronkowski throws, you know, which are in some ways almost like a run, because he's not going to wait. He's not going to wait to see if Tom Brady's good. He's going to be doing this right now. And that's going to be interesting, because remember last week we talked about the one kind of team that over the years gives New England or we should say Tom Brady trouble. And that's one that roughs him up. And you've got one right here. The folks who are listening and who don't know who the Jacksonville Jaguars are, join the club, first of all, because, you know, most people paid very little attention to them until it got literally down to playoff time. But they have had a huge transformation. Tom Coughlin coming in and defensive-minded, and their draft picks were, I mean, there's a best haul in modern-day history if you look at how many guys who are rookies who are contributing on this team. Amongst them, great defensive players, great defensive backs, and they go after the quarterback. And if Brady is a little less than perfect and he starts to get rough, then don't you think that every Jacksonville player right now is sketching on their little pad, go for the hand? Go for the hand, tackle him, grab his arm, hit his hand when you get him. That's how football is played. So, I went into this week thinking this is a blowout. Given this development with Brady and given how Jacksonville plays defense, I'm not so sure about the blowout anymore. I'm not going to go so far as to say, therefore, I'm picking Jacksonville. But this is the kind of team that gives New England trouble.
And, well, the one question, obviously, how many points can they score, Mitch? Because the one thing we do know for sure, they're not scoring 45 points on Sunday. I don't care what it is. So I thought before the Brady thing reared its ugly head here that their scenario was that they could certainly conceivably win a 14-10 or 17-13 game. There's no, and they could. If they rush the passer, as you say, and if Fournette runs for 100 and fill in the blank, 20, 30, 40, 50 yards, then theoretically, yeah, I think that I thought they had a puncher's chance even before this. And but now they still have to score. We still don't know
that. Yes.
Let's flip it over for a second. You know, the prevailing wisdom is that they're going to gang up and they're going to stack the box and try to take away Fournette and make Bortles beat them. Can Bortles do that? He's still going to have to perform Bortles no matter what they do with Brady. Right.
What Blake Bortles shows up in Foxborough on Sunday afternoon? Do we get the Blake Bortles who ran for more yards than he passed for against the Buffalo Bills, or do we get the guy who made enough plays in the second half when it looked like everybody was getting wobbly to beat the Steelers? And that's a fair question, because if you look at the Jaguars, and by the way, guys, if it wasn't the Jacksonville Jaguars, if it was a more iconic name in pro football, and they'd had the kind of season they had, and they play the way they do, you'd say, you know what? They're built to win a championship game on Sunday. But because they haven't had this kind of game since Tom Coughlin was coaching them in his second year there, that we continue to treat them like a mystery guest, even though we do have some pretty good evidence that they can score points. But now, are they going to score points against a New England defense that clearly had its pride insulted early in the season, and has played so much better the second half of the year? Well, that's a fair question.
It's the question. And if you look at Pittsburgh, who supposedly had a great defense, or at least a very good defense, before they woke up, they were down 21-0. And obviously, this is the same way that the Jaguars aren't going to creep up on New England. I think, you know, if they fall behind by two touchdowns, I don't think Blake Bortles is going to lead them back, unless it's a defensive, you know, unless it's fumble recovery and interception kind of thing. Their best bet is to catch New England a little sleeping, taking them a little, you know, less than seriously. It's hard to believe they would do that in an AFC championship game, but, you know, Jacksonville doesn't necessarily inspire fear the way that, you know, they were counting on Pittsburgh the same way that Pittsburgh was counting on them. But they have to come out strong and do something early and shake things up. You know, they need a 10-0 lead or, you know, a jump and make New England start to think about it a little bit. It does say something that they got four Pro Bowlers and all of them are defensive players.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean, I just want to take 1 second to take my hat off to teams living in Detroit and watching perpetual mediocrity, and there are a lot of people listening to us in the Clevelands of the world and whatever who see that. To watch a team go from 3-13 to 10-6, to watch them have a fantastic draft, to turn around their quarterback, because a lot of times the quarterback you get is a quarterback you're stuck with, and Bortles has clearly improved his game this year. I just want to take my hat off to the fact that that can be done. And for people who are living in the cities like the Detroits and the Clevelands and the perpetual also-rans, there is a way that it gets done. You have to have the right people. In this case, it clearly seems to have been Coughlin going into the GM spot and having a great haul and a draft. But it can be done. And that's what makes the NFL, I think, you know, different than a lot of other leagues, is that you can have these turnarounds.
And where did it start, guys? It started at the top. This owner is an outside-the-box thinker, an innovative guy. And, so, I mean, I got to start with him for getting credit and bringing in Coughlin. Mike, let me ask you, what was your initial impression when you heard that Coughlin was going down there in that capacity?
That things would get better, that things would change. Bob, you just morphed into my brain, okay? Because I was thinking about this, because I went, you know, I've known Tom since he coached at Boston College. I've known Tom since he gave us, as BC men, one of the great moments we've ever had in sports, a victory at South Bend over Notre Dame when Notre Dame was number one in the country. So, I've always joked with him that he's got me, okay? that earned him capital that would never. But I was reading a story at ESPN.com by Michael DiRocco about how everything changed when he showed up. And this is Jeff Lagerman, who played, he's now a broadcaster, who played for Coughlin when Coughlin coached there. And he said the way people dressed in the building changed. People weren't wearing that casual wear anymore, wearing sweats and all that. All of a sudden, people started wearing wearing khaki pants and dress shirts. And I'm not saying that a dress code changes that, but there was a new sheriff in town. And this is the guy who had clocks set 5 minutes ahead at with the Giants. Okay, so if you showed up on time, in his view, you were late, and people made fun of that. But we all know that there is a certain tone that is set at the top of organizations. The Patriots are the way they are because everything filters down from Belichick. And you know, I will use the line about Tom Coughlin, the great Bill Russell used to say about Joe Morgan, the baseball player. Isn't it funny how good teams seem to follow Tom Coughlin around?
Mm-hmm. All right. Having said all that, what are we predicting for this game? Bob?
Well, it's so fuzzy. I'll go all homer. I'll go all parochial. I find it hard to believe that the Patriots will find a way to win, with or without Brady, whether with an impaired Brady. I'm skeptical that the Jacksonville Jaguars can score more than, say, 17 points in this game. So I think the Patriots will squeak out a win one way or the other.
I think the Patriots will win this game. But can I give you one unless, okay? Unless we look up 2 minutes into the second quarter on Sunday and they're down 10-0 and it's become apparent that Brady is not throwing the ball the way he usually can and he's going to have to throw the ball around.
I'll echo your unless. I'll pick the Patriots to win, and even comfortably, unless there's a more than three downs that Tom Brady is not in the game. Okay, if he exits the game, all bets are off. I'm not sure Brian Hoyer remembers if the ball is round or oblong anymore. Okay, that's how rare you get to play when you're behind Tom Brady. And Jacksonville is the kind of team that will smell blood in the water if there's a backup quarterback in there. So if Tom Brady plays the whole game, even with a red glove, a purple glove, or a chartreuse glove, I think the Patriots will win and fairly comfortably. But there's my caveat. All right,
Mitch, before we move on, I'm just going to go back to that Rodgers analogy that I drew before, okay? Early in that game, when you saw him floating balls that he used to zip when he was on the run, you had a bad feeling. And we'll know the first couple of times Brady tries to throw the ball down the field, because I think, do we all agree that the Jags are going to make him, if when they're not trying to knock him on his butt, throw the ball down the field?
Well, sure, especially if they sense that there's something wrong. Look, I watched Matthew Stafford just get a finger hurt, and everything changed. I mean, all of his passes were just, you know, 6 inches a little long or off a guy's hand or a little bit high, and they get picked off. And against a really good defensive team, you know, Brady's magic is that he throws it into windows that no one else could even see, let alone execute. If it's a finger or something like that, which some people say, there goes that 6-inch difference. So, I think we're all kind of saying the same thing. Before we go to the other side on the NFC, let me tell you about Freshly. All right, we all live busy lives, and unfortunately, there's not enough hours in the day to get everything done, right? Freshly is the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy, no matter what life throws your way. Their team of chefs create all-natural, gluten-free dinners, and they deliver them fresh to your door. It's like having a restaurant come up, park the truck, open the door, and you start eating. So even if you get stuck at work late, you can still come home to a delicious dinner cooked by a chef. No more worrying about having to figure out what's for dinner, and especially no mess to clean up afterwards. Their meals are fantastic. Baked penne marinara, veggie baked penne, cod cakes, slow-cooked beef chili, spaghetti squash and meatballs, chicken and butternut risotto. I'm just rattling off from the pasta section, let alone the different meats and things. They're all healthy. They're a lot of gluten-free, sugar-free, whatever your particular diet may be. Best part is the number of comfort meals they currently have. If you go to their website and check it out, it's like looking at a massive restaurant menu. You can customize your weekly meals from their constantly changing, rotating menu of more than 30 chef-crafted creations. No weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them, and every single meal comes with detailed and easy-to-read overview of each ingredient. Each ingredient. Nothing better than knowing what's in your food and what goes on in your daily life when you have a chef-cooked dinner waiting at home. Here's how you can get it, okay? Check out this week's menu created by Freshly's chefs, and you get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners, plus free shipping. Here's how you get that deal. You go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters. That's simple. You feel so relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal every night. Freshly.com/sportsreporters for $25 off your first order. Order today to see what life's like when you no longer have to think about dinner.
You know, Mitch, sometimes when I'm not nearly as hungry at the start of that read as I am by the end of it. Have you ever noticed that you just find yourself, you know what I'm saying?
Hankering for some penne marinara right now.
Yes, I am.
All right, guys. Now, give me a minute here. I have to pull on my dog mask.
We thought you were wearing it. We thought you were already wearing that, Bob.
Yeah, that's a dog mask?
I have a new one. I have a new dog mask. All right, there's another football game on Sunday. It's some people would feel that it's the varsity game, but but it's the big game between the Vikings and the Eagles in Philadelphia, and the Eagles have had the dream scenario that a team can have at this time of year: a cause. They have a mantra. They have a rallying cry. They have a reason to be us against them. None of you guys thought we could do this. You know, we're underdogs. We're at home and we're 3-point underdogs.
Is that how they talk regularly, or just with dog masks on?
Yeah. So anyway, the Eagles-Vikings. Now, to me, before the season, we all knew that it was going to come down to Case Keenum versus Nick Foles. So, I mean, this is just an affirmation of our preseason brilliance.
Right.
But interesting game. Interesting game. And it really does. This is the subplot is fantastic. These guys were teammates. I mean, God, you know, you can't make this stuff up.
They were teammates on the Rams, and between them, I don't think they won half their games. So, you know, that goes back and just shows you the way that they've changed. By the way, before we get into the thicker weeds of defenses and running backs, to be equal with what we were just talking about before, what happens if either one of these quarterbacks gets hurt? Like I said, on the Eagles, you tell me who the backup is to Nick Foles.
No
clue. On the Vikings, you bring in a guy who was starting for the Vikings at one point. So you have to say in that category, if we're talking about backup quarterbacks, the Vikings are far better equipped if the defense comes in and blindsides the quarterback than the Eagles are. I really could not tell you who the backup is to Nick Foles, but I wouldn't be counting on whoever it was to win the game. Having said that, isn't it strange the Eagles 2 weeks in a row playing at home are underdogs?
No. Oh.
2 weeks are there. The Vikings are 3.5
point favorites. We all know the reason why. We all know it's no mystery why, but this is playing into, you know, this place to their advantage. They have something to hang their hat on.
By the way, I just looked this up while you guys were chatting amongst yourself, and according to the depth chart that I have pulled up from NFL.com, the backup quarterback for the Eagles is Nate Sudfeld.
That changes everything.
Yeah, so I think you might like a walk back that statement that the Eagles might be in trouble, Mitch, if anything happens to the immortal Nick Foles on Sunday night.
Nate Sudfeld?
That's right. That's what I'm talking about.
I think I was at his bar mitzvah.
I'm not even there. No, I'm not even going to go there.
The thing is that these teams are similar in a lot of ways, and you're watching them, you know, from the fact that they're dealing with quarterbacks who you didn't expect to be playing this position, to the fact that they're 1-2 in the run defense, they're 1-in total and scoring defense, and 1-4. I mean, they're very close to one another. The rushing games are like 3-7. Yep. They're kind of parallel teams, and it's a kind of a question of who does more with it. And I saw an interesting piece during the course of the, you know, litany of stuff that was written this week about this game, and one of them stood out to me that said the Vikings need to somehow forget how they got here. And forget this miracle pass, and forget,
that,
you know, the Case Keenum thing of, oh my God, you know, when Case Keenum, those were his words, oh my God, he couldn't believe that they had actually advanced. They were mentally done, and, you know, there's something to that, right? That's an intangible that's important, don't you guys think?
I was thinking about this. Maybe you want that to be the game that puts you into the Super Bowl, because you got 2 weeks to sort of deal with the coming down from the high of the way you won. Mitch, I was thinking about this. Remember that when Frank Reich came off the bench for the Bills, when he was a backup quarterback and they were a million points behind the Houston Oilers, and they won that game. And of course, they were the Bills, so they ended up not winning the Super Bowl game.
Right.
This is a very tricky emotional, I think it's a very tricky emotional game for the Vikings to play. And here's why. Yes, you can start to believe we're the team of destiny. It's like in a major tennis championship when you get out of three match points in the second round and you go on to win the tournament. That happens, okay? And you do feel like you're playing with house money. But man, oh man, if you buy into too much into that team of destiny stuff, it can bite you in the ass.
I'm thinking as we're talking about weaponry here, and you gotta love those the wide receivers of the Vikings. Thielen, I mean that's one of the great surprises of the year.
One of the great stories, Bobby. It's one of the great stories in pro football this year.
Absolutely, I didn't know this story before the season. He was new to me, and he's awful good, and Diggs is good too. And the guy to watch on the Eagles to me is in that regard is the tight end. Ertz, he's a good player, but
and Alshon Jeffrey.
Guys, let's just get right to it here. Who do you trust more, Keenum or Foles? I know I have my answer.
Well, I trust Keenum more because he was in the barrel with the season on the line in the last few minutes on Sunday. You have to trust Keenum more because he made one incredibly lucky throw on the second to last drive. And then he made a damn good throw to Diggs, and the rest is history. But again, we talked about this the other day. I'm not discounting Nick Foles. Nick Foles, to me, outplayed Matt Ryan last weekend. And he's an extremely efficient player. He showed with his performance, what was he, 23 for 30 or whatever he was. He was mostly a dink and dunk guy, but wasn't only a dink and dunk guy. I don't think this is going to be a quarterback game. I mean, one of them is going to make more plays and somebody's going to go to the Super Bowl. I get that, okay? But I think both of these teams are going to want to run the ball. And is the Vikings defense better? Yeah. But is the Eagles defense terrific? It was terrific against the Falcons. And when it was asked to stand and deliver, when it was, you know, when they were in the red zone
right.
and a chance to knock them out of the season, boy, oh boy, did they play great.
And that's why I think this game will, but I agree with you, Michael, that it won't be a quarterback decided game, but I think it will be a quarterback mistake decided game.
Yeah,
I think interceptions, blindside fumbles when you get sacked, this is going to tell the tale of this game in some way. I don't think either quarterback is going to throw for 300 yards and have an incredible day. And it is worth remembering the Eagles did shut down Atlanta, a team with a pedigree, a team that had been there before, a team with all the experience in the world. Matt Ryan and Atlanta should not have been shook up when they had a chance to, you know, possibly win the game, and they still couldn't win it. Now you're taking on the Vikings in Philadelphia, as we speak about every week here, Michael,
yep.
Where is the game being played?
Where's the game?
In Philadelphia, Vikings are an indoor team, and they're playing outside. And they, for all the great things that they've had this year, it's always different when you're 1 foot away from the Super Bowl or in the Super Bowl. Those games are different than every other game you play. So the Vikings don't have that pedigree here. The Eagles do have that defense. And I do think the Eagles actually have a bit of a better running game if they executed. I mean, running games are not really the you got Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon for the Vikings. You know, neither one of them are you going to hang a game on necessarily. And then you got Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount for the third and fourth quarters on the Eagles side. And I do think the running is going to be a big part of it. But something tells me a tipped pass, a sack that forces a fumble, this is going to be where these games are told. And the Eagles certainly are as good as the Vikings at home in doing that kind of thing.
And it looks now, and it, obviously this is northeast weather we're talking about, right now the forecast is like 50 degrees and cloudy. So it doesn't look like conditions are going to be a big factor. But Mitch, you just brought up a name. I mean, so often in the NFL, you know, we talk so much about the trade deadline in baseball, and it's profound every year. And look what happened this year. I mean, the Astros get Verlander, and it changes everything. Ajayi was a great pickup for the Philadelphia Eagles. A great pickup for them.
Yeah, and he probably should get the ball more than he did last week. I mean, LeGarrette Blount is a great, you know, tough, big runner, and he's good to use when teams are tired and suddenly you bring him in and he just plows through, and suddenly he's picking up 8 yards every time you give him the ball. But Ajayi, they may rely on him more, especially, you know, the way that Minnesota gets to the quarterback. I've been saying this every week we're on the podcast. Whenever I talk about Minnesota, that I watch them every year, and that's one thing that they do. It doesn't matter who's coaching them. It doesn't matter who's on the team. I mean, they've been doing it for – it's just in their pedigree. Minnesota gets to the quarterback, and so they want the ball out of – Nick Foles' hands quickly. That's the number one thing, the way he throws. He's, whatever he does, don't stand back there and try to make a big decision. And, of course, one of the fastest ways to get the ball out of a quarterback's hand is to give it to somebody else, and that would be the running back. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Ajayi gets a lot more carries this week.
And, Bob, guess what? Guess who the Eagles think is this year's team of destiny? Them! They think, you know, this is the destiny ball. I mean, they're both playing with backup quarterbacks, okay? And you know, a lot of people thought that the Eagles were not going to beat the Falcons. We saw what happened with the Vikings. So this is destiny on destiny on Sunday. And again, it might not be any more complicated in the end. If you have to pick the difference between them, it might be that the Eagles are playing at home.
Yeah. It could absolutely, and the whole Vikings thing. It is fortunate, as we alluded to, that the weather is going to be very nice for this time of the year in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and the Vikings, you know, don't have to deal with the ramifications of not being.
And by the way, Ajayi, fourth. They got him for a fourth round draft pick. At the end of October.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really think, with the exception of New England, which is, you know, personnel wise, they do amazing things every year with guys you haven't heard of. Right. But I don't remember a season where the final four teams were more about construction, backup moves, draft picks, and whatever. When you look at Jacksonville and how they rebuilt, when you look at how Minnesota had to shift things around, when you look at like Ajayi, a pickup for the Eagles, isn't three of the four teams the story of personnel moves more than it is even just football execution?
You're so right. And I don't just think of football. I think of baseball as well. For all the glorification we do with coaches, and we do a lot of it, and so much of it is justified, how often do you start to think that the real stars in sports, in professional sports right now, are general managers?
Certainly this year. Certainly the three of these four. I'm very, very impressed with what these teams have been able to do when they were either rebuilding or broken.
And all right, so who wins? Who wins this game?
Okay, I'll start this time. I can't, you know, if it's that country song, what are you going to believe, him or your lion eyes or whatever it is?
So it's I looked it up. It's actually a Marx Brothers line.
Really?
I think it was in Duck Soup.
Who are you going to believe, me or your lion eyes? So my eyes cannot deny what I see with Minnesota. I just see a team that wreaks havoc. And I think they're going to go into Philadelphia and wreak some havoc. I think they're going to win this game off of a couple of key plays, at least several of which will be defensive turnovers or things like that. And I predict that they will win by less than a touchdown.
Ryan?
I'm going Vikings. I think Keenum's going to cap off a year that had him in the MVP discussion. I mean, honestly, he's going to go for 400, but I think he's going to be efficient. I think he's going to be good. I love the receivers he's got. And everything that you said about their defense, I certainly would echo too. I'm going to go Minnesota, but I certainly think it's going to be a tight game.
I hate to be a contrarian because, as you both know, it's not my nature. I got a funny feeling about the Eagles. I do. I can't explain it. X's and O's wise. I think that I can look at the Vikings, and if I'm checking boxes, I think there are far more advantages to the Vikings on Sunday than there are for the Eagles, including the head coach. And nothing against Doug Peterson, but I think Mike Zimmerman has elevated himself with the job he's done with the Vikings over the last few years. I think that the Eagles are going to find a way. And I don't know whether this is karma or whether I think that Nick Foles is going to make a few more plays or if they are going to run the ball. And I hate to sound like this is chalk talk 18, okay? But I think Ryan's right. I think turnovers will decide this game. And I do believe there's that the edge that the Eagles are carrying with them. How often do we laugh at the, oh, nobody believes in us when that card gets played in sports? Right. But I think with these guys is real. So I think they find a way. You guys can have a lot of fun with me on Monday. I think they find a way to win this game.
What's funny is when you listen to all three of us make the predictions on this thing, you could take the name of the team out and put the other team in, and it would
so
work
right.
too.
Yeah, I know. Right? I know. That's why it's a fun weekend, Mitch. Yeah. I mean, really, these are two fun games.
Yeah, these are going to be great. All right, before we shift over, I talked to you a little earlier about the importance of a good meal. Well, what's more important after you have the good meal than getting a good night of sleep, right? And that's why I'm going to talk to you about Mattress Firm. The base for my argument is simple. Follow these sports analogies. Your bed budget can go further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I'm just saying it the way it's handed
it's written
to me. They are the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, our Mattress Firm. But know this, they're more than just mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback.
Oh,
I'm taking the whole
sure.
football thing to nine
boy,
yards.
Yeah,
go
sure.
to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast. Right as we're talking to you right now, they have an offer out there for 120 nights. How many months is that?
That's four months, Mitch.
4 months. Thank you. 120 nights sleep trial. 4 months sleep trial to ensure perfection. If you don't know after 120 nights.
Hell no.
I have five more nights? I need 125 nights to know if this bed is good. 120 nights sleep and 120 night low price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. You can have 4 months to go look around and see if there's any better one. Talk about a 1-2 punch. That's a knockout.
Whoa.
Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow.
All right, now listen. I'm going to do, in a couple minutes, I'm going to do a parting shot on what I think of the new NBA All-Star Game format. But before we get to that, I want to ask you both a question. And I know that every year in all the major sports, the All-Star Game weekend or midweek or whatever it is becomes it's sort of like their version of a political convention. But I want to ask a larger question because we see the quality of these games now. Why do we still even need All-Star Games in sports? And wouldn't the athletes rather just have 3 or 4 days off in the middle of the year?
Well, first of all, we got to back up here. The concept, which dates from 1933 with the Baseball All-Star Game, which was basically a newspaper promotion of the Chicago Tribune, but the idea of putting the best players together to play the game at a level theoretical, I'm speaking theoretically now, at a theoretical level to see the best players play the game at a highest level, I see nothing wrong with that concept.
When's the last time that happened, Bob?
Well, right. Well, we've allowed things to happen, but do not tell me that there have never been good NBA All-Star games because I saw them and I covered them.
100 years ago.
It's deteriorated. I won't watch. I stop. Yes, they've allowed, but it could be resurrected into something better is all I'm saying. But I think the ship, Mike, has probably sailed. Yes, you're right. It's what the farce of a 190 to 188 All-Star game and uncontested dunks and nothing else or threes and dunks. That's an NBA All-Star game. No, but don't tell me we didn't see good All-Star
but
games
we
when
did
there was
past
spirited
tense.
Competition where guys were trying to prove because of the pride of wanting to be better than the other guy.
Well, I think part of the reason is, and this is a cause and effect, the All-Star games in all sports have gone from a game to, it reminds me of what they did with chickens. You know, once upon a time, you killed a chicken, you ate the chicken. Now they inject it with so many vitamins and steroids and all the rest of it. At the time you're eating the chicken, it's the size of a lion. You know, well, it's the same thing that they do with these All-Star games. They used to have, it was one day they got, and let's remember what part of the reason was that they grew in popularity. You did not always get a chance to see that one-star player who was playing in Texas on a team that wasn't so great, or that one-star player was playing in Seattle that you kept hearing about, but it was late at night. Now you get to see everybody. In the NBA, for example, they tell you before the game in their promotions who the All-Stars are. You know, it's LeBron against, you know, whoever they're playing. All right? So there's every night is an All-Star game between several All-Stars. So by the time you get these All-Stars together, you've seen them. You've seen them play. Every single game is on television. If you want to watch it, you can buy the packages. So that has changed. The need to have a geographical single place for players to all be playing against one another, for people to watch on television, those days are gone. Nobody needs that anymore. If you want to watch Chris Paul, you can watch Chris Paul. If you want to watch Kevin Love, you can get it on your TV no matter where you live. All right? Now, add to that with the injection of the steroids, which is what I call the All-Star Weekend, where it's all about home run hitting, three-point shooting, rookie games, whatever. It's a pageant. It's a celebration of the sport. It's a reason to get people in for an entire week. It's turned into a convention instead of a game.
Right.
Bob, the game is the least part of all All-Star Weekends now. It's skills competitions. They combine it with bands and music and rap music, depending on what sport you're in. It's not about the game anymore. So
Mike,
the game is the least
important. I know so well. I've watched this evolution. My first All-Star game, not wasn't my first at all. My first All-Star game that I covered was in 1970. And the day of the game, we arrived in the morning. Most people, the day of the game was in Philadelphia. There was a luncheon in which they introduced the players. That was it. They went out, they played the game. And everybody went off on their merry way the next day. That was it. And now of course the NBA was the first one to come up with the concept of the weekend. And in the beginning, it worked for a while, but now it's
Bob, in baseball, there was a time when it would be the only time all year you would see Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle on the same field. I remember. Right. The first All-Star game in pro basketball after the merger, and it was in Milwaukee. And I think you were there, Bobby, and they ended up giving the MVP to Doc because they were going to give it to Doc, and then Paul Westphal should have won it because of the way the game. I get all that, okay? But my question is, and I know it's a tradition, the Pro Bowl is a joke now. Okay. The baseball All-Star game, you see guys for two or three innings, and fortunately, we're not letting home field in the World Series ride on the outcome of it. They've tried, Mitch, you know this, they've tried all different variations in the NHL, the U.S. against the world and this and that. I asked again, is it time to put it all to rest once and for all?
Well, if they're not going to try to address the core problem or the core issue of having a game where people have pride and want to play and actually want to play to win and one up the guys, then right. Yeah, because what we've been looking at now is an embarrassment. It has nothing to do with the sport whatsoever. Basketball, I'm speaking specifically. Baseball is still the closest thing to a real game of the four. But you're probably right, Mike. I'm just diehard hanging on to the concept that the original concept of what the best against the best ought to be a thing we want to watch. And I saw them. 1988, that game in Seattle. Oh boy,
no, they were great, Bob. It's like the Second Amendment. Everybody holds that up and holds it up to the light. Now it was written for muskets in the 18th century and had a completely different meaning. These are concepts to me that have so outlived their shelf life. That's all I'm saying.
Well, let's not forget that if there's 300 players in a league or whatever the number is, whatever, and 30 involved in an All-Star thing, what the purpose that it serves for the rest of them is to give them a break. And in hockey and in basketball and in baseball, you could use that, for the players to just take a mental break from the longevity of the season, and for the players who have to participate in the thing, so that they get bonuses. Remember, there's money tied to these games. They're not going away. I mean, the three of us can talk about it all we want. They're not going away. They're money makers both for the leagues and for the players, because you make an All-Star team, you get a bonus. But Mike, when you talked about hockey, I realize if you throw hockey and basketball and the NFL, which is now playing the game in between, the week between the Super Bowl and whatever, and they put it in Orlando instead of Florida and other things like that, you think about the number of changes in All-Star formats from now it's LeBron and Steph are picking up their teams like it's a pickup game to the year that the NHL 2 years ago opened it up to anybody can vote for anybody, and John Scott, who they thought was the worst player in the entire NHL, gets elected to captain of the team and then wins the MVP award and then never plays again. I mean, it's the most turned on its ear all-star game you've ever seen in any sport. Right. You realize that the constant flipping of how you pick these teams indicates that there is a problem with it. Indicates that there's a problem with its popularity and they don't know how to market.
It's my parting shot.
All right, well let me stop talking about it then there. But I do think it's an interesting question as to whether they're needed anymore.
Listen, time may go. Before we do get to our parting shots, Pitney Bowes is the industry leader in mailing and shipping solutions. So they probably would be able to ship the concept of All-Star Games to the moon. No matter what you send or how often, Pitney Bowes has the solution that precisely fits your needs. Way print mail safe. You and your business will save time and money when you print postage, and you won't need to wait in line at the post office anymore. You also won't need to worry about putting the correct amount of postage on your letter or package. Effective January 21st, USPS mailing and shipping costs will rise, or they're expected to go up. But you'll save 3 cents per letter with the Pitney Bowes solution. These discounts are not available at the post office. Beat the increase. Whether you're sending a letter or a package, you'll be paying less and saving money if you're using a Pitney Bowes sending solution. Plans start at just $5 per month. And for our listeners, Pitney Bowes is offering a free trial, so you're sure to find the solution that's right for you. Visit pb.com/sportsreporters to learn more and try it for free. Terms apply. See site for details. That's pb.com/sportsreporters. And we thank Pitney Bowes for sponsoring our podcast. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you help make this podcast possible. Time for our parting shots. And I will lead off, and it comes right out of what we were just talking about. The expression "jump the shark" comes from a famous old sitcom called Happy Days. The show was 5 years into its run when its most iconic and famous character, the Fonz, played by Henry Winkler, jumped a shark in Hawaii while water skiing. Now, if you look up the definition of jumping the shark on the internet, you read about, quote, "far-fetched events are included merely for the sake of novelty, indicative of a decline in quality," end quote. The NBA All-Star Game has now officially jumped the shark, now that it's having the team captains, LeBron and Steph in this case, choose up sides like they would in a playground game, which is all the game has become. You want to know what the score exactly was last year? West 192, East 182. Year before, West 196, and it was a shame that they didn't crack the magic 200-point barrier, East 173. Bob is so right. The game has deteriorated over time into an alley-oop dunk fest. That's not a showcase event for the greatest players in the world. It's something less watchable than the Home Run Derby or the freaking Pro Bowl.
I suspect it's not exactly a news bulletin that there is plenty wrong with college sports in America. So here's the latest bonehead idea. There is talk about doing away with the idea that a player, and we're obviously talking about football or basketball here, would no longer have to sit out a year after transferring. This on top of one and done and the horrible fifth-year transfer provision that is enabling major schools to poach players from the smaller conferences, and you'd better believe that's what they're doing, especially in basketball. The ultimate problem is that no one can trust anyone to be honorable. That's why the NCAA was formed in the first place. You couldn't trust people to be honorable in 1910, and you can't trust them to be honorable now. There is a good reason why the rule was put in place. And I don't want to hear about, well, the coaches can leave whenever they want and go wherever they want, because that's a separate matter entirely. If this rule goes through, chaos will ensue. I'll get
ensue.
It down.
I knew you had it.
If this rule goes through, chaos will ensue. You watch.
Normally this time of year, the news here in Detroit and Michigan is dominated with Lions coaching moves or the upcoming Tigers season. But all week long, one story has dominated the headlines and sound bites in my state. A sad parade of young women, former gymnasts, some of them Olympic medalists, all saying the same thing, that team doctor Larry Nassar sexually abused them. Nassar operated out of Michigan State in a clinic there for years and volunteered for the USA Olympic program. And here in Michigan, it's been almost too much to watch. More than 140 victims have filed lawsuits about the abuse that NASA allegedly perpetrated. In victim statements, one after another, you hear tale after tale of this monster taking 12, 13, 14-year-old girls, lying them on a training table, and telling them he's working on the back or hip issues while putting his hand in places that would make any father of any daughter almost murderous. That this was allowed to go on for so long and through so many is beyond horrific, and Nasser is already going to spend the rest of his life in jail. But listening to these tear-filled stories, to know that they were kept secret for so long, to know that more than the perpetrator had to be aware of what was going on here, well, it's all a huge cautionary tale about youth sports and who we trust when we try to make young champions out of our teens and preteens. No gold medal could ever be worth the horror that this week has revealed. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Monday and Friday, and you can catch it, of course, on anywhere you get your popular podcasts. And if you do like what you hear, leave us a review. We always enjoy reading those. We will be back here on Monday, and that ought to be a fun one because we can find out just how correct we were about all of these predictions. And, of course, we'll be able to set up the Super Bowl and more.
Until Hey, Mitch, by the way.
Yes.
You know what happens now? You know what happens?
What?
Two championship games ensue. Yeah, they do.
That's right. They ensue.
Ensue. Yeah, thank you.
We will be here on Monday. And until then, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific weekend.